This is Leslie Thompson Sasso interviewing Mr. Philip Smith, October 19th, 2016. Mr. Smith is a longtime resident of Venice, Illinois. So, Mr. Smith, where were you born and how did your family come to reside in Venice?
Okay, I was born in Granite City, Illinois. We were at that time living in North Venice, Venice being divided into two parts, North and South. North Venice was actually in the Madison School District where I lived. I went to school there called Blair School, and that was first grade through sixth grade. And then when we completed sixth grade, we moved to Madison Junior High School. That was for seventh and eighth grade. And my father was a police officer in Venice, but it was a unique situation because North Venice was, as I said, in the Madison School District, and we received our mail from Madison. We had a Madison mailing address, but our fire and police protection were Venice. So it was kind of a unique situation there. And as I said, we lived there until I was probably, maybe 2 or 3 years old, and then we moved to a different address in North Venice. And lived there until I was probably 12 or 13, and then we moved to South Venice. So.
Okay. Growing up in the 1950s and 60s was certainly an exciting time. Such political figures like Stevenson, Truman, and Kennedy all passed through Venice at some point in their political career. Can you recall any of these moments when they were in Venice, or like a memorable time when they were there?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Another memorable name was Paul Simon, who I recall coming down. I believe I was a senior or a junior, actually a junior in high school. And the high school was adjacent to the American Legion Hall. And candidate Kennedy came at that time and traveled through the entire area, stopping off in Venice. And we were allowed to leave the school and walk across the lawn to actually see him and listen to his speech. So it was very exciting at that time. And Venice, at that time, being very, very political, was more or less the political hub of the county. The Madison County Democratic chairman, excuse me, was from Venice. So he orchestrated lots of events and had a lot of influence throughout the state with that.
Now, you mentioned that your father was a police officer in Venice. So what was growing up, you went to school in what would be considered Madison, but can you speak to a little bit about the climate that he dealt with as a police officer in Venice?
Well, when he first started, I'm sure a lot of what he dealt with was the gambling activities and the taverns that were located there on Main Street in Venice. Now, Main Street was just as you come across the McKinley Bridge. And as I recall, and this was even before my time, that it was a gambling mecca along there with lots of taverns. And people would come from St. Louis, come over to Venice. So it was quite popular at that time. Some of the bars, don't know if you're interested in the names, was 316 Club was one, Norma's was one, 700 Club was another. So it was quite an active strip down through there at that time.
Do you remember when you were growing up in Venice, like, did you ever go to that Main Street, or was that like, you know, not allowed? Like, did your parents allow you to go down there, or did your dad see kind of like the vice of the area and say, this isn't good, or?
No, yes, I do recall going down there. There was a gentleman by the name of Bill Smith, and that happened to be my father's name. Bill Smith was associated with a gangster named Buster Wertman at that time. And Bill ran this 316 Club. And I'm sure there was gambling that went on there late at night, but they also would have meals on Sunday afternoon. And as a child, I can recall going with our family and having dinner there So yes, I do remember that. That was something. And then even as I grew older, there were still lots of bars along there. And then in addition to that was the office for the bridge. The McKinley Bridge office was located there. And so I would go down there, and actually on Saturday mornings, people would congregate there, just as a little meeting place to talk and visit. And there would be a lot of politics discussed at that time as well. So,
so you mentioned that this 316 Club, it was interesting because in part of my research, I actually found a magazine article that highlighted the gambling in Venice in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. What was your, I guess, it's interesting because if your father was a police officer, you still had dinner with this, you know, prominent family that, you know, was associated with mm-hmm. organized crime. Mm-hmm. What was that dynamic like between your dad and the organized crime that was there?
Well, I think they were basically friends. You know, I was young, so I didn't know a lot of what the dynamics were other than the fact that they were friends. And I recall as a child, they call this other Bill Smith, Bad Eye Bill Smith is the name they referred to. And I recall as a child that he came to our house in North Venice in a 1955 red Cadillac. And I was just astounded because I had probably never seen a Cadillac, you know, let alone one that was almost a block long. But I recall it was a beautiful car, and he was a very short man in stature, really very little guy, but he was very nice and gentle. But he was as I said, as far as I know, they were just friends with my father. Mm-hmm.
Your dad was never put in a compromising situation where he would ever have to, like, arrest or ticket any of these, you know, clubs or anything like that.
I would assume so, but I really couldn't say for sure. I have no evidence of that. But I would assume, being in the position he held, yes, I'm sure there were disturbances there that they would be called to, and they would have to squelch, certainly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
And I grew up in New Jersey, so like Atlantic City, and, you know, the same type of, you know, vice that's down there. So mm-hmm. It's interesting to see on this side. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned when you said that there was a meeting outside of by where the McKinley Bridge is, that mm-hmm. Venice becomes like this political hub. From your memory, what do you recall of it being this political hub? Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, they had at one time, and this was I was a little older, they had an organization called the Venice City Organization. And basically what it was just a group of men meeting at the bridge office, playing cards. And at that time, they would take turns providing a meal. For example, one month the Venice Fire Department firemen would get together and prepare a meal. The next month, maybe it would be the police department. The next month, it might be the school board members. It would be the city workers one month. So with a variety of people, and you had all different people providing very good food too, I might add. And then, as I said, we'd eat, play cards, and then socialize. And they would have politicians come, candidates come and speak to this group as well. So yeah, it was fun, as I recall, as a younger guy. There was a gentleman named Buck Simmons, Walter Simmons, who was our county Democratic chairman. And I guess as a result of me being associated with this, and this was before I went to college, there were lots of jobs coming out of Venice going to Springfield and for state jobs. And so I was fortunate to have gotten a job with the help of Buck Simmons, and went to Springfield and worked for Secretary of State Paul Powell at that time.
Right. About how many people were a part of that, like, the organization that you had mentioned. Seems like a pretty big number.
Yeah, how many workers?
How many people were a part of that organization where, like, they would bring the meals? Was most of the guys in Venice, or?
Yeah, we would probably have 25, 30 guys at each gathering. And it was held on, I think it was on Thursday nights, if I remember correctly. But it was kind of a big deal because it gave us, you know, as I said, it gave you an opportunity to get together and socialize. Also, as a youngster, not a youngster, but as a young man, too, I was involved in the Venice Lions Club. And that was prominent. And I think from that stemmed some political stuff. But because it was the same people. Venice being a very small place, you had a lot of the same people who were members of both groups. So that was interesting. And they did a lot of good as well. I remember when I was president of it as a young man, we had an Eagle Scout from there named Tommy Hooks, who had gone to Washington, D.C. on a conference and was diving off of the board at a swimming pool there and became paralyzed as a result. And the Lions Club got together along with the help of the city organization, and we threw a series of barbecues. In fact, I think we had five of them throughout from Venice, Madison, and Granite City, and we raised like $5,000 to give to the family. So that's another thing that just sticks out from being part of growing up in Venice.
Yeah, wow. And that's a, you know, surmountable amount of money for sure.
Yes,
at that time.
It was. Yeah, exactly.
So when you were in the Lions Club, that was during your high school experience in Venice?
No, I was out of high school at that time. Yeah, that was probably, I would say that was probably around 1970, maybe 71.
Okay. Well, going back a little bit, I wanted to talk a little bit about the climate of Venice High School in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I know that in 1962, they began to reroute the busing, and therefore, little by slow, schools would become integrated. Because in 1954, schools across the country were desegregated based on Brown versus Board. Do you remember how... Now, you said you graduated in 61, but do you remember the climate at this time as schools began to make the shift to integrate in Madison as well as in Venice?
Yeah, I do recall a little bit of that, but I think actually when that integration took place was 1964 or possibly 65. So it was after I had, you know, I had graduated from the high school there in Venice. But... yeah, as I recall, Lincoln School was the other high school in Venice. And as I recall, I mean, that was a newer school, and that was where the blacks had gone to school. And that was a newer school, and they had, a good basketball team, as I recall back then. And, as far as I was concerned as a youngster, I mean, it was just the way it was. You know, they had their own school, which was a lot newer and better than ours. But everybody seemed to be happy in the early 60s.
Yeah. One of the things that I noticed was that Venice had a railroad that came through it. And so on the other side of the tracks were the Lee Wright homes. Would you say that even in the 60s, did you have much integration in Venice? Or was it still somewhat segregated?
North Venice was integrated before South Venice, and that's where I had lived. Actually, it's a unique situation. You had Madison on one side of the tracks, then you had North Venice, and that's where I grew up, and that was white to a certain point. I think the street was Weaver Street at one time, and everything on the other side of Weaver Street was West Madison. So it was kind of unique the way it was all cut up. But West Madison was all black, and North Venice was white. But then in the late 50s, North Venice then became integrated. And then later on in the 70s, then South Venice became integrated.
So as far as like growing up for you, you didn't feel any racial tension in Venice at all whatsoever. Like, one of the things that surprised me was when I was researching, Madison schools in like 62 or 63 had a Klan presence, and they had burned crosses on the front lawn of the school because they were protesting integration of schooling. And so I had wondered, you know, you had mentioned your dad was a police officer, if he was still working at the time, or you know, looking back and reading newspapers, like, were you shocked that this was happening in like such close proximity to where you grew up? And
at one time I do, and I don't know, I don't remember any specifics about it, but I think that it was probably in the, I was married in 1967, so I think it was between 1967 and 1970. There was one time that, yeah, that there seemed to be a little uprising between the blacks and the whites there, but I don't remember the specifics on it. I just recall I lived on the street there that kind of connected North Venice and South Venice, so much of the traffic would pass by our house, and I do recall a little bit of some uprising, but not specifics. However, I do recall, as I said, because I grew up in North Venice, I had an older brother, 4 years older than me, so he went through high schools in Madison. And in the 50s is when they really had serious problems at Madison, and that's when that was integrated, probably 54, 55. But Venice wasn't integrated then, like I said, until like 65, until about 10 years later. So.
After graduating high school, where did you attend college?
I went to SIUE in Edwardsville. Actually, I recall when they built the campus, and when I started, I actually attended classes in East St. Louis. That's where the SIU classes were being held then. So my first year, I went there. And then I went 1 year, and then didn't go back, didn't finish, didn't stay in college, and started working, and worked for a while. And then once I got married, then I went back and then attended at SIUE in Edwardsville.
What was campus like in East St. Louis? Because coming from Venice, it seems that everybody that I've talked to that lives there, you know, says it's a very tight-knit, nice community. The park, you know, was a beautiful place to go, and everybody seemed to know their neighbors. And so coming out of Venice and going to East St. Louis in college, can you talk a little bit about what the climate was like there?
Yeah, basically it was just, I went there, attended classes, and came home. I didn't spend any time on campus down there. I even recall back then, believe it or not, I had one class that was on TV. So I would go like maybe once a week or every 2 weeks, and then you'd watch the rest of your classes on TV, which was, you know, for going back that far, was rather unique. But other than that, I don't remember a whole lot about the campus down there. It was they called it 10th Street Tech, and it was right there. It was the old Rock Junior High School in East St. Louis is where the classes were held. But yes, you're right about Venice being close-knit. We had a beautiful park, and it was called Lee Park, and it was named after Dr. Lee, who was the mayor at one time, and then his son became mayor later, Dr. Johnny Lee Jr. But yeah, it was a beautiful park. The land was donated by the Lee family. The Lee family lived there for a long time, you know, until they actually died off. So.
So after you left college, what did you do for work?
I graduated like in June or May and started teaching immediately at summer school in Venice at the Venice Grade School. I think I had eighth grade students, and they were all black at that time. It was a small class, and it was good. There was a gentleman named Mr. Vickers who was superintendent, who was a very nice man, and he was very good. He did a good job down there at Venice. And I started teaching there, and I taught summer school there, and then was fortunate enough to get a full-time teaching position in Granite City as an elementary school teacher.
Now, you mentioned that you also worked for the Secretary of State, Paul Powell. Mm-hmm. So that happened after the first year you completed campus at East St. Louis. You said you went out to work. So is that who you were working for at that time?
I believe it was, yeah. I'm thinking that was probably, I went to SIU well in the summer, graduated in 61, worked at Laclede Steel in the summer, then went to SIU in East St. Louis and finished that first year, and then went back to Laclede Steel, worked there for a while. Then I left there, and I think I worked at Tri-City Grocery Company. That was a grocery company in the Tri-City area. In fact, they were all over the area. Worked there for a while and then left there, and I guess that would have been about 63 or 4 that I left there and then went to Springfield and worked for Secretary Powell.
What was your job for Secretary Powell?
I worked in the driver's license division. At that time, to renew your driver's license, you would just fill out an application, mail it with a check, and then I was in the office where we received those checks. I had 9 people work for me who basically just opened the mail and it sorted it, and I just supervised that department. One thing kind of unique I remember about that is that when we would get applications in from people in the state of Illinois, and it would be a celebrity, for example, Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali, we would see something like that, or Otto Kerner, who was governor at that time, would send his in. Of course, everybody would pass it around, and that was kind of a neat thing to do at that time, you know.
Who was the most famous driver's license that you had to?
Probably one of those two.
One of those two?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we would see other people who were local people, but anytime the big names would come through like that, that was interesting. You know, we'd always, everybody pass around, look at their check, look at their signature on the check, and yeah, it's kind of neat.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Paul Powell had a huge influence on the state of Illinois. He was even dubbed the Democrat even Republicans voted for, because he had this larger than life presence. So, working in the licensing division, how much interaction did you have with him, and can you speak a little bit about his character, the time that he was alive, and, you know, being in the state, you know, his influence?
But the position I held was a small position compared to him. I don't know that I ever actually saw him other than when I think I got the job when I went up there. But I never really saw him. The only thing I do recall, at Christmas time, they would come around and take a nice collection from everybody for a Christmas gift for him. And so I'm sure with that department being as large as it was, that was a very nice Christmas gift that he received. Also, I think you alluded to a little story about the shoebox. I guess I can talk about that as well.
Sure.
And John Rendleman, who was chancellor at SIU, as I understand it, was his executor and had received a call from Springfield stating that Mr. Powell had passed away at the St. Nicholas Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And the story goes that Mr. Rendleman then immediately drove up there, parked in a no parking zone in front of the hotel, and went upstairs to, I assume, retrieve some shoeboxes that were stored in a closet, as the story goes, and started taking those down to his car and putting them in the trunk. And then on one of the following trips down, the car was gone. In the city of Springfield, I guess, police department, somebody had it towed. So that was, I recall that story vividly, and how quickly they, you know, he made some calls and got the car back. I only assume that all the money was in it. I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, that would make interesting, you know, a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. That is, you know, part of the story was that, you know, Powell had over $800,000, mm-hmm. dollars that he had received, you know, which you wonder now, like, if your collection at Christmas time was a part of that. But you know, when he died in 1970, Rendleman's accounts of, you know, the money and where potentially it could have come from, it didn't come out until about the following year. At this time, were you still working in 71 for the licensing department, or were you you were teaching?
Yeah, no. In fact, I started my teaching career in 1971, so I was long gone from Springfield at that time.
Yeah, so could you speak to the climate of when these reports came out and you worked for the State Department, and even though you never really interacted with him, what was your opinion? Was everybody in Illinois shocked? Because he seemed like such a beloved political figure.
Yes, I think probably a lot of them were, but maybe the insiders knew more and they may have known sources that money may have come from. I don't know, other than, they collected money from us for Christmas gifts and I guess birthday, as I recall, whatever it was. So it could have been some of that, but I don't know. I would say, yeah, the people, you know, on the outside, little people like myself, we were shocked at it. But I don't know about others.
Hmm. So after working for Powell, you returned to teach in Venice. What was the school district like at the time that you returned in the 70s?
Well, it was a very good school district, actually. As I recall, Venice was one of the higher paid districts because we had Union Electric plant there and we had railroads there. So they had a lot of revenue as opposed to some of the other districts. So it was one of the higher paid districts at that time. And like I said, I only taught there during the summer session. But living there, after I got married, I lived there for 7 years, my wife and I did. My father owned some rental property, and we moved into one of those houses and kind of got our start. So we lived there 7 years, but it was a very good school district, and they were noted, had a good basketball team as well, having gone to state and won state. So it was a good school district. It was the teachers had done a good job. Some of them were still there, the ones that I had. We're still teaching at that time, so.
Mm-hmm. What eventually motivated you to move out of Venice?
Well, my wife was from Collinsville, and it took an arm and a leg to get her to move there. And one of the reasons was there were no stores. There was no shopping area, because if you lived in Venice, if you did any shopping at all, you'd go to Granite City. You know, or even back then, you'd go to East St. Louis, because East St. Louis was very vibrant at that time, and there were lots of stores there. But we lived there for 7 years, kind of got our feet on the ground, and gave us a start, but she wanted to be back closer to her mother and her family, so we moved to Collinsville in 1974. So,
when you left Venice, were a lot of other families leaving as well and moving out too? Because the dynamic shifted quite a bit in the population. Mm-hmm. Now it's, you know, I think 98% African American. Mm-hmm. So did you see some of that change over time that you were there?
Yes, it was. It was the beginning of it, actually. About the time we moved was the beginning of the change. And they were, you know, moving into the area. So I recall guys that I graduated with, a lot of them left. They didn't stay. I guess I stayed because my father had the rental property, and it was, you know, we would pay rent when we could, and when we couldn't, he wouldn't throw us out or evict us. So that's why we stayed. But a lot of the young people, as they graduated, they would leave. Some of them would go off to college and then not come back. But there were a few my age that stayed, as I recall. Mm-hmm.
So when you left in 74, you said, mm-hmm. What, your father stayed in Venice, or
My father,
he eventually
actually
move out,
yeah,
too?
He was, yes, my parents, my father actually passed away that year. They were still there. They remained there, and then my mother remained there for a few years after that. And then she and my sister moved out of there. I would say probably, 1970, around that time. So.
Mm-hmm. So working for the school system, what changes have you seen over your career in education as far as Madison County's school system is concerned?
Oh, gosh. I mean, technology, of course, is one of the big things that I've noticed. The schools, Venice, of course, if we're going back to Venice, since that's what we're talking about, mm-hmm. got much smaller. And then eventually, the high school closed, as you probably know. And ironically, me working here in the ROE, I was instrumental in doing that. And it was kind of personal that I had to go down and actually go through the building when, a high school that I had attended and, be a part of the demolition. But as I said, Venice was always good in sports. As far as the educational in Madison County and the schools, I guess technology would be the biggest change we've had.
Venice's high school closed in 2004, I believe.
I don't remember the exact date, but that sounds right.
And so what was it like, what was the process that closed the high school exactly? Because now from an administrative angle, what is it that exactly closed the school?
Well, I don't really know other than the fact the enrollment was down, mm-hmm. But I don't know specifically what the reason was they did that. I just knew at that time I didn't have anything to do with it as far as being part of this office. But I know that it was they were in financial trouble and they just didn't have the students or the revenue anymore to operate the high school. So emerging just wasn't, with Madison, it was very difficult to try to get that done. I mean, anytime you want to merge school districts, I mean, you get school board members that have to give up their seats and they're not willing to do that, so.
What was it like going back through the high school, knowing that it was closing and you graduated there, those years back? What was the condition? Had some things stayed the same? Had some things changed?
Yeah, there were. It was basically an old building, and a lot of it was pretty much the same as when I had attended there. And it was especially interesting, even going back into the office. I recall climbing up in one of the closets, way in the back. There were boxes of what I mentioned, we still have some of that, but I actually came across old grade cards from my class that had my name on there, and we dug some of that stuff out. But I was surprised that the school district, they didn't retain any of that, and I guess by law they don't have to, I don't know, after so long a time. But what I could retrieve and save, I did, and then brought here, and now we retain it here in the regional office. But yeah, it was interesting just to go back as I'd walk through the halls and have the memories that I had and see the things. There were two buildings, and they were connected by a corridor, the one building being the grade school, which was newer than the high school. But when I was in high school, we would have a class or two, we'd have to go over to the grade school building. I think I did for math and speech, but it was kind of interesting just to walk through there and just see what it was like. It just brought back a lot of memories.
When Venice merged with Madison, what were the biggest challenges to the community?
The school district?
Yeah.
They didn't really merge with Madison. Venice still has their own separate school district.
Okay.
And Madison has theirs. So they're not really together. They did not merge.
When Venice High School closed, mm-hmm. then those students now go to...
Well, I'm not certain where they some of them may have gone to Madison, but I don't know that legally they could have a Venice address and attend unless they pay. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but some of them may have gone to East St. Louis or Lovejoy, but I don't really know the specifics on that.
So after the high school closed, Did you ever, like, you went back to have to go through the, I guess, building, you found some of the records mm-hmm. in the old history, and then did you notice at all, when you were back there, how the climate of Venice had changed from what you remembered when you left in the 70s?
Well, the time, I mean, it was already integrated. I'm almost fully integrated at the time the high school closed. So yeah, after the high school closed, it pretty much, I think, has remained the same. They still have the grade school there, I think grade K through 8, which is, I think they're doing quite well. You know, Dr. Cullen, who used to be our assistant regional superintendent here, is now superintendent there. And I think they're doing a very good job in the school down there. I've been down there several times. As part of my duties here, I go out and inspect buildings. And so I go through and inspect the school. And everything seems to be running well down there. In fact, several years ago, I even went down there and substituted as a principal a few times when they were in need. So, and I found that very interesting, you know, but it was pretty much the same as I had subbed as a principal in the Granite City Schools as well. So it was basically the problems were the same, you know, it was just smaller down there than Granite City.
What, so even as a former educator, what type of problems would you say are prevalent in, like you mentioned, Granite City and Venice. Venice mm-hmm. just has its smaller.
Truancy was one, you know, a big one. Cooperation from the parents as far as helping the children, you know, and that type of thing were the big things, you know. Discipline as much as anywhere, I guess. And then when you'd have discipline problems, getting hold of the parents, many times you couldn't. You know, I mean, I've had instances as a substitute principal where a student would be left there, not picked up after school, so I'd have to stay. I've stayed as late as like 6:30 before waiting for parents to show up to pick up the kids. So pretty much common problems like that.
So school maybe has changed a lot since you went to Venice High School, like being on the other side and, you know, as a teacher and even as an administrator. But you're involved in the Venice Historical Society. And part of, from what I understand, their initiative is to kind of preserve this history of Venice as well as the experiences of high school that everybody had. So what types of things are you hoping that are preserved from your memories or the collective memory of Venice?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, I mean, the people and the closeness of the people, and that was the big thing in Venice. Growing up there, everybody knew everybody, you know, and it was, as far as politics, it was predominantly Democratic there. I mean, there was always a joke that there was one person voting Republican and they spent a lot of time trying to figure out who it was. But it was predominantly Democratic. The closeness is the big thing, I think, with Venice. And I hope they can let that continue. I mean, those memories continue on. I do know that we had a church there, St. Mark's Church. And I just received word yesterday that they're going to have their last mass at that church. I attended about a month ago, with what I thought was the last mass, but now I understand officially it wasn't. And now they've got it scheduled, I think, for the 20th, or maybe October, something like that. And no, it wouldn't be the 20th, it'd be the, I don't know, in a week or so, it's going to be the last mass officially, and then that church will close. So there's a lot of things, like I said, the closeness of the people and the church and the school and that. I hope we can kind of retain those memories a lot.
How large was your classes in the high school? Like when you talk about the closeness of the community, like how many students do you remember in your classes, or how large was your graduating class of the high school?
Okay, as I recall, when I attended high school there, But the entire population of four-year high school was about 125 students. I graduated with 25 students. And I think the class or year after me, there were like 20 or 21, so it was even smaller. So yeah, it was very small. The classes were all small. And that probably was part of the, is why people became close, and you knew everybody. But I'd say that I probably knew everyone in the high school. That there may have been one or two students that maybe were new or something, but everybody kind of knew everybody in the whole high school at that time. But it was neat place to grow up.
It sounds like such an interesting experience, because everybody that I've talked to has always said that it was kind of like a happy days scenario. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that everybody really just, got along and, really enjoyed their high school experiences. When you attended, do you remember, like, what were some of the, were you involved in any sports or clubs or things that Venice offered? And then coming back to it in the 70s, did you think that anything had changed? Because now, I don't know if there's still that same community feeling that there is.
Mm-hmm. Going back and looking at something you said there made me think of it. When I was in high school, it was like I said, the town was so small and unique. We had a grocery store called Kavner's Grocery Store, which was a block from the school. I would actually leave my study hall and go to Kavner's, and they would have bags of groceries with people's name written on them. And I would take and pick those up, take their car, and drive around Venice and deliver those groceries. And you would just walk into the house. I mean, you maybe knock on the door, and the understanding was you just walk in and set it on their table. And I recall doing that for a long time. But I was actually doing it during my study hall. As far as activities in school, I was not involved in sports, but I was president of the student council, and part of the student council for 2 or 3 years when I was in high school. And remember one year actually getting to go to Chicago on the train for the student council convention was a big thing for a little boy from Venice, But it was all those things played a part in it, made it a lot closer,
When do you think the dynamic of Venice changed?
Wow, I would say. When the integration took place at the high school, because as I understand, and I was gone then, that it became overcrowded at that time, and I think that's when a lot of it changed. The classes were much larger, and I think that's when it was, and that probably would have been, that would have been in the 65, I think, was the first year it integrated, and any time between 65 and 75 probably is when the major changes took place.
What type of changes? Is it just the integration of new people? Was there any industry that was closing or jobs that were beginning to move out of Venice and into other areas? Was the bars in that main street, were they still open? Were there more problems that were maybe coming out of those areas?
The Union Electric was a big factor, I think, when it kind of closed down in the railroads. There was a place, Dow Chemical Company was actually in North Venice or in the city of Madison, which, also I think there were lots of jobs there. Laclede Steel was a big employer at that time in Madison. I left Laclede Steel. I worked there after I worked the summer when I graduated from high school, went to college, came back, worked again, left, and then came back and worked at Laclede in the accounting department until probably 1969 when I went back to college. But I think that's when a lot of things changed, when the jobs left.
What did you do for Laclede Steel the summer after you graduated?
Okay, I worked just as a laborer in the plant. real eye-opener, you know. I mean, coming from high school and into a steel mill and working, you know, some of the rough jobs. But I enjoyed it. It was paid well. It helped pay for my college. And then, as I said, I went to college in 1 year, came back and worked again as a laborer, but then left there. And then I went to Tri-City Grocery Company, as I said. Then when I came back later, I came back and worked in the accounting department and figured bonus on jobs and did a lot of that at that time. So,
do you remember what year that was that you came back to work in accounting? Was that the late 60s or?
Well, let's see. I started college, I think, in 69, so I'd worked there about, I would say about 65 or 66 is when I came back and worked at Laclede Steel.
And you worked there until you started SIU again?
Right, until like 69, and then I just quit and went back to school full time.
Mm. One of the things that I had found in a lot of newspaper reports at this time was that between like 67, 68, and 69, groups like CORE and the NAACP were coming into Madison and Venice, and in particular they were interested in knowing how many like black workers were able to acquire jobs in like Venice and obviously in Madison. So I was wondering if, you know, on the accounting side of it, if you saw like any of that disparity or could speak to any of the claims as to why they might have been there.
No, I don't even recall an NAACP group down there in Venice with the time that I lived there. I do know that there have always been black police officers on the police department and fire department working for the city. I can always recall that. As far as the teachers in the school, I don't recall. I know I didn't have any. Even when I went to school in North Venice, there in the Madison School District, there were no black teachers. But I think when the school integrated, there were a few black teachers that came from Lincoln, and they worked there. But there, you know, as far as I know, there were blacks always employed there. So, and at Laclede Steel as well when I worked there.
Do you remember, because that was the claim, was that they weren't getting, I guess, like maybe equal opportunity for jobs. Mm-hmm. But at Laclede, do you remember at all, like, was it like a, you know, like you had like 50-50 or, you know, like population-wise, or you just knew that jobs were available to black workers that wanted them?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I don't recall that ever having been a problem down there or an issue. And like I said, I don't remember in NAACP or any black groups or in that area. It could have been after I left. Maybe they became a part of it, you know.
Yeah. It was interesting because when you mentioned earlier that you like that scuffle, that the racial scuffle that you weren't really sure, it actually involved in 1969 a black police officer that was accused of, like, I guess, harassing the black communities of the Project Homes in Leawright and in Venice Homes. Uh-huh. And I didn't know if you remembered. So apparently that night, 30 black youths came into Venice and like firebombed part of the town. From where I understand geographically, because like zoning has changed and things like that, it was in the park that was by where Mayor Lee used to live. So I didn't know how close in proximity you were to that, or if you remember any of that happening, or maybe that was the scuffle you had thought.
Yeah, what year would that have been?
It was 69.
69,
and there was one flash in a newspaper.
Yeah. See, I lived there at the entrance to the park, which was just down the street from Dr. Lee. And I remember a small skirmish, but I don't remember anything that would probably made the news and as you're describing it. I don't remember that being a big issue, and I would have because I lived there. My backyard was actually, you know, part of the park. So, yeah, I was right there in the midst of it, but I don't remember it being a huge issue, you know, as you're describing it was in the papers.
It's interesting because it was only one article, and it was in the Edwardsville paper, and they arrested 30 black youth, and then they were let go the next day.
Okay.
But from what I can kind of discern was that the park was then closed, and they began like limiting like who could go into the park, at what hours, at what time. And then the park, I guess, used to have like a recreational area with like rides and like a carnival and stuff like that. And then eventually that all was closed.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, you know, press brought something.
I believe that was the case. You know, it just probably made for a story to sell papers, because I really don't remember that being a huge issue. I do vaguely, as I'm thinking back, maybe I do recall having seen police vehicles from other municipalities like Madison, maybe the Madison County Sheriff's Department. They may have been patrolling the area, but just thinking back, you know, other than that, it may have been a one-time thing, a one-night thing, and they arrested people and then let them go, and that was it probably. But yeah, and that could have been the beginning of some of the changing at that time. Yeah, the park had rides. They weren't actually like carnival rides. They were just merry-go-rounds and swings. Things like that I don't know they're still there or not, actually, you know, but that there also used to be ball diamonds there, and that there were buildings that had little restrooms in them. I recall that. Actually, my father did part-time work as a handyman type thing, and I recall helping him as a young boy build some of those back then. So yeah.
So, with your work on the Venice Historical Society and kind of speaking to those greater themes, aside from the sense of community, are there any projects that the Historical Commission is working on in the preservation of Venice history?
The one thing I do recall they had something to do with was a cemetery that's located in Granite City. And it was maybe the St. Mark Cemetery. I don't know the specifics on it, but that was a big thing they worked on. I do remember also that they brought the bells from maybe the old church and erected those right here in Edwardsville at Sunset Hill Cemetery. I think they're up there. But other than that, I don't attend the meetings, so I'm really not up on what they're actually doing. But those two things I do know, you know. Along that line, as a young man, I was invited. I used to be invited with Dr. Lee and Buck Simmons and various other people from the community. And the last Saturday before Christmas of every year, they would go to St. Louis, and we'd dress up. And we'd all go to a hotel for lunch, and then we'd all do a little bit of shopping, and then eat lunch, and then just socialize. And I actually have been a part of that for probably 50 some odd years, and maybe only missed like 2 years out of 50 some odd years. And I now probably am the oldest member of the group. But we still have, and we still do it, and we still have like a third generation of kids that come. And the story was back then that you'd bring your son, I mean, providing he was old enough, and let him get a feel of what it was like and help to keep that thing going. And so we've been doing that, and I'm confident that once I'm gone that these young guys are still will continue to do this. And so We don't dress up and go to lunch anymore like we used to, but we still get together, and we do, you know, we'll have a little food and just socialize.
Does the current mayor of Venice take part in this as well?
No. Actually, I don't recall we have had any black members. Well, it's not actually, they're not members, they're just people that show up. But it's just mostly, it goes back to the time before the city was integrated, you know.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So the lunch that you go to, these are members of, like, families that were all a part of Venice that
exactly.
were prominent. And mm-hmm. now you said the Lees, there aren't any more.
There's
is that
one.
Correct?
Dr. Oh, okay. Lee's son, Jack Lee, is still living. Yeah, and he still comes. And he has in the past brought his son. And then we had, there was a Hartman family. In fact, one of the Hartmans had been mayor prior to Dr. Lee. And we still have some of the Hartmans' kids, grandkids, great-grandkids that are still involved. Tolliver was another big family down there. We have, we still had the Tollivers come. I'm confident it'll go on and on and on. I don't know that, even though the kids now, and a lot of them coming now, I guess their kids were not raised in Venice. But they still feel a connection because their fathers were and their grandfathers were. And this is something that they had done and they want to be a part of it. So I'm confident it'll keep going, you know, a long time after I'm gone, I hope.
Yeah,
you know.
That's a great tradition. Yeah. Did Dr. Lee start that?
Yes.
As far as you know?
I believe he probably was one of the original ones that started it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. He and I think a guy named Roy Edwards and Buck Simmons, those probably were down, that were major, you know, players in it. I do recall one year there were three of us, Jack Tolliver, Charlie Simmons, and myself, and we were at the top of the Statler Hotel, and we were having lunch, and it was three of us, and we thought, are we going to let this thing die? You know, last year we had, you know, a lot more. And now this year we're down to three, you know, and we decided we were all going to bring somebody else next year and we'd build it up, and it just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We probably will have, we probably had as many as 50 guys, and we can still easily get 25 to 30 even now. So, but it's just kind of neat to do.
Yeah. One last question. So how many people from Venice, like from your generation, still stay in touch with each other? That sense of community that was fostered there. Like you said, you have this like luncheon, so that's a nice way to, mm-hmm. you know, bridge the generation gap and mm-hmm. Have people become involved in wanting to know more about the history of Venice, because it is interesting and mm-hmm. unique. But how many people do you know of, whether it was from like your graduating class or mm-hmm. others, that still do have this sense of community and keep in touch?
Yeah, probably from my actual class, there's only a couple that were my age, but a lot of these guys now are younger than me. I'd say, you know, we probably have 20 of them that we do. And just, I may not see them, but once or twice, three times a year, but we just have that connection that you always come back, you know. And at Christmas time, we always think of this, and I get calls from younger guys now that always want to know if we're going to do it again, you know. And I said, sure, you know, we'll get it together, and they kind of now are taking over, so that's good to see.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.